I suppose we think we all know a lot more about young brains because of the Disney movie Inside Out. The brain, we learn, is a not quite fully formed committee of characters, creative, fearful, emotional, brilliant, and maybe even a little violent sometimes.
Fear. I need a list of all the possible negative outcomes on the first day at a new school.
Way ahead of you there. Does anyone know how to spell meteor?
Disgust. Make sure Riley stands out today, but also blends in. When I'm through, Riley will...
Well, you don't have to be grown up to be a billionaire. In fact, looking like you know more about internet algorithms than shaving may be the key to changing the world these days.
When I was getting started, you know, with my roommates and in college, you'd never think that you could build this company or anything like that, right? Because, I mean, it's just, I mean, we were college students, right? And
yeah,
we were just building stuff because we thought it was cool.
Mark Zuckerberg, the teenager with an idea, started Facebook and became the youngest billionaire in the history of the world.
He said the way my blue eyes shined, put those Georgia stars to shame that...
Teen Taylor rules. Ms. Swift faced down Apple and is now on the cover of Vanity Fair this month.
So here I stand, one girl among many. I speak, not for myself, but for those without voice can be heard.
Fearless teenager Malala Yousafzai did not let near death stop her from becoming a global advocate for girls' rights, a teenage Nobel Prize winner. But there are teenage monsters as well. The destruction and terror in the Boston bombings, or the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, or the deaths of 9 people at a church in Charleston, South Carolina. All caused by young, determined, fearless boys in various stages of adolescence. The years between ages 12 and 24 are a time when brains go through a rewiring and remodeling. We tend to dismiss adolescence as a kind of temporary insanity and simply wait for kids to grow up and get serious. But Dan Siegel, the author of Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain, says that we need to engage more with developing adolescents. Siegel says we need to make sure that when adolescents decide to use the fearless creativity within them, it's to contribute to a world that welcomes them rather than to strike out at a world they think is against them.
You know, when a child moves into adolescence, it's amazing, but now we understand the brain is remodeling. What that means, it's going to prune some of its circuits away, take them away like in a garden, but then add new connections to the circuits that are going to remain. When we don't think of adolescence as just immature or impulsive or being driven by raging hormones, those are myths, and actually reveal the truths, we can actually empower adolescents to make their brain more integrated and therefore more resilient.
Is there an element to adolescence which is the inability to walk and chew gum at the same time, in a sense that so much is going on at the same time that often signals get crossed and what's actually being communicated is difficult to decipher?
Yeah, you know, one way to think about it is in the middle of your brain, you got a very emotion-based region that's getting all sorts of signals from the body and even the lower areas of the brain itself. We know when you look at brain scans of adolescents that this emotional region is just more active than it is in childhood or even than it is in us as adults. So there's no question emotions are stronger in adolescence. But what we need to do then is teach adolescents how this region of the brain is functioning during this period of time. And the amazing thing is studies show you can actually allow the executive functions to actually start to learn about their own emotions and deal with them in a different way. We call that emotional intelligence. And that is a teachable skill in childhood and adolescence and even adulthood.
What would you say the developing adolescent brain is adapted for in evolutionary biological terms? And how does that function, maybe based on adaptations long past, clash with the kinds of experiences that adolescents encounter today with their parents or just in the world?
Yeah, these are great questions. There's two really important evolutionary things going on here. One is that nature requires, not just for us humans, but all mammals, for the child mammal, let's say the child human, to get ready to actually leave the nest and to establish a home away from the biological parents that they're genetically related to. So there's a natural drive for an adolescent, unlike a child, to push away from adults. The second issue is this. We evolve to deal with the world as it is. So in childhood, we're soaking in knowledge like a sponge. And then as adults, we've kind of found our niche in what we're doing. But the world is always changing. So for our species to be as adaptive as it is, and we are an incredibly adaptive species, I believe that it's adolescence, brain changing, that basically says this: I'm a kid, I want to learn from you as an adult. Now I'm an adolescent. Evolution in my biology, my brain says, hey, I see what you're telling me, but I'm going to push back on it. You say up, I'm going to say down. You say left, I'm going to say right. Now, that is biologically, evolutionarily important. Why? Because we know that the major innovations in technology, in science, in music and art, they come from adolescent minds. And that's because adolescents are literally biologically programmed to push against the status quo that adults have created and imagine a world that could be, not just learn the world that is. And that's why we need to see adolescence as the hope for the future.
Would you say that some of the school shootings by, in most cases, young people, and the most perhaps horrifying example, the terrorism in Boston of Mr. Tsarnaev, who's now sentenced to death, there was much talk of his adolescent brain during the trial. Are these crimes instances of a failure of what could possibly have been achieved with these techniques in adolescence, or is there something else going on?
You know, I think it's a great question, and in each case it's probably different, but the broad stroke statement is this. When an adolescent feels disenfranchised in various ways, whether internally driven or socially driven or by belief systems, then there is a risk that not thinking about the respecting of other life can lead to these terrible, terrible, terrible outcomes. So I think it's possible that if we actually provided ways where adolescents can feel connected or when they feel disconnected, there can be support for them. For some of these examples, maybe not all of them, we can actually alter the course of these violent activities happening.
How would you describe these time-in techniques where parents and children and educators and students can be more mindful in the various activities that they would go about maybe without such a sense of focus?
Yeah. So time in is a term that I use just to embody a bunch of practices that research has shown basically allow you, number one, to take your focus of attention and focus it inwardly. So a time in practice, for example, might be on sensing your breath, or it might be on becoming aware of sensations in your body, or what are you thinking, or even reflecting on your memories. What we now know from science is that how you focus your attention in ways that are time in-like or mindful actually stimulate the activation of certain circuits of the brain. And when we study this in the brain, what we see is that when you stimulate those circuits, they grow. This practice, as simple as it is, actually makes massively important changes in the brain that for an adolescent or an adult can change the course of their life.
Dan Siegel is the author of Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. Dan, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, John. Great to be here.